I don't think anybody even knew this report was coming. So there was zero pressure on this report. What Omar is outlining, that was precisely why Philippe was right to send this back to the drawing board, because, you know, some Palestinian refugees may indeed have this great suffering required for it to be a crime against humanity, but a lot of them clearly don't. And that's, from my understanding, is not the nuance that the report introduced, to suggest that all 6 million Palestinian refugees get to go back to Israel, that, you know, that they're all suffering so severely that this is a crime against humanity if they don't. Or separately, you know, could the crime against humanity be satisfied by going to Palestine, you know, the West Bank or Gaza, rather than Israel? I mean, I don't know. But these are the kinds of complexities that need to be addressed rather than just rush through a 33-page report, which just is not long enough, is not detailed enough, doesn't have enough research to get into these complexities to make a compelling case. That's why I never would have allowed this report to get through the review process.
We just have 20 seconds. Omar Shakir from Amman, your final comment.
Look, I think it says something very clear that two former Human Rights Watch staffers are having a discussion about the integrity of the work and the future of the organization. Where is Philippe Loupillon?
Omar Shakir, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Omar has just resigned as Israel-Palestine director at Human Rights Watch after HRW blocked a report which called Israel's denial of the right of return for Palestinians a crime against humanity. And Kenneth Roth, former executive director of Human Rights Watch. That does it for our show. On Monday, February 23rd, Democracy Now! Will be celebrating our 30th anniversary at Riverside Church with Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, Maria Ressa, Michael Stipe, Wynton Marsalis, and many others. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We hope to see you there. Go to democracynow.org for information.
Hi, this is Ray Lynn, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. This month's nominating committee meeting will be held on Thursday, February 12th at 5 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Jay Hocken Productions, presenting a screening of Sumud, a doctor's report on genocide and survival in Gaza, at Cinema 21 on Sunday, February 8th. The screening will be followed by a panel discussion. Tickets and info at cinema21.com.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Genius Box. As the song says, I'm Althea.
And I'm Reed.
And here we are in the Genius Box for you on our Friday morning talk radio program. Reed, how are you?
We'll always enter the box for you.
For me or for the listener?
Inclusive all.
Inclusive all. Welcome to the Genius Box.
Thank you. Okay. The Genius Box is so cozy and warm today.
Yeah. It's a brisk one out there.
I'm actually steaming in here.
But also, don't get fooled by the weather. I feel like people are going to get fooled by it being so gorgeous and lovely.
Yeah.
Not so, guys. Don't get it twisted.
Don't get it twisted.
This is exactly how we get a April snowstorm that keeps us inside for a week. Okay, so.
Hey, keep not your, me. Not building the snowman.
Yeah.
I'm building a snow fortress.
Sure, sure.
I'm building a
snow box.
A snow box and an snow awesome
snow genius box, maybe.
Snowboard jump
that
I'll
yeah,
go
have
off
to do
of
that.
And break my leg.
Okay. All right. Well, we got that to look forward to. As far as what to look forward to in the rest of our show, we are talking some local headlines. We got some updates on ICE for you. We've got some updates on the housing, Portland Housing Bureau. And finding more money in the dang couch cushions.
Shaking the couch cushions out. And what's this? Another $15 million?
Yeah. Somehow a couple coins rolled into the vent and they found those. So we'll be talking about that as well. Should we jump in?
Shall we just...
Are you ready?
Dive in.
Let's do it. Okay.
Let's wait another 10 minutes.
Lots of ICE goings on to talk about. We'll maybe start chronologically, I guess.
Yeah.
Last weekend at the Labor Against ICE rally, ICE tear gassed a bunch of kids. Reed and I were there on the ground reporting, just there. Yeah, we were there for John's birthday, but of course also for the rally.
Also witnessing and then getting tear gassed.
Yep. And so that was, I don't know, can I say it? I think it was bad. I think that they should have done all that.
I think that's safe to say, Althea.
Yeah, geez.
A brave comment by Althea here.
Yeah, I want to go out on a limb and say that to everybody. If somehow you missed the video and the very striking images of this whole thing.
Somehow even worse than all the other tear gassings they've done in Portland.
Yeah, no, and like, it's funny because when I was trying to explain to people, particularly people who don't live in Portland, mm-hmm. I felt very much the need to say, and they weren't doing this, and they weren't doing this, and they weren't doing this. It's like, it's the tear gas. Sorry, we dealt with all of it. You shouldn't be tear. It's chemical weapons.
It's
You're not supposed to be
weapon.
Doing this on anybody.
If I'm not mistaken, is it banned by the Geneva Convention,
yes,
which we're not really a party to? Even less so now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And yes, there were a bunch of kids and pets and elders.
Oh, yeah. And a tear gas canister shattered a window of a nearby apartment.
There were people out on their balconies watching the rally. Kids having to wash their eyes out, mm-hmm, and stuff. Obviously there's no, getting away from the provocation. There couldn't really be any provocation that warrants chemical weapons, in my opinion.
Right.
But there was extra... No chemical weapons. And I don't know. We were lucky there wasn't some kind of stampede. It was dicey.
Well, yeah. I mean, all credit to the protest leaders and the people there. It was like a really well run event.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people coming to other people's aid, bringing in water. They were the moment tear gas canister shot off, there were, all these veins opened up in the crowd to help kind of shepherd people from the, mm-hmm, front out. So, shout out to everyone who was tear gassed for
helping thy neighbor and whatnot.
Helping thy neighbor.
It provoked some reactions. So Mayor Wilson got a little testier than we've seen him. If you can say.
He loosened the collar a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. No, he says that everybody who works at the ICE facility should resign and that all of the ICE agents should leave, which is, more maybe stronger language from him than we've seen. Also, as a result of this instance, there's a restraining order against the feds at the ICE facility using chemical weapons and less lethal munitions on the protesters. The way that it's worded, it does feel like
it's
maybe they'll still do it, but
it seems like they'll probably just still use it. I mean, the restraining order is for what, 15 days, 14 days?
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks.
But it's, requires them to, I mean, you no longer, yeah, it requires them to be, to only use in the justification of imminent threat of physical harm, which is, I think, as we'll get to in the next story, when it's deployed, that argument usually not in the circumstances that anyone else would consider imminent harm.
Yeah.
I think ICE agents have revealed themselves to be,
poor judges,
ghouls, but also total cowards.
Right.
And I think that they love that defense, and so it seemed like the federal judge, you know, offering that to them. Hey, just, you know, these are the words you want to say right before you shoot off the canister.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
seems like just maybe have them not do
maybe,
it.
Hey
maybe
guys,
a zero circumstances.
Strat, okay? Yeah,
but no. I guess they theoretically can't use them to, as you know, as in the case on Saturday, to move a crowd from the driveway, which is, you know, their justification at the time. They're blocking the entrance to the ICE facility, whatever that means.
Right, right. Some other ICE things we wanted to talk about. The couple that was shot by ICE earlier in January, They are not who ICE said they were.
You being ICE, yeah.
Because ICE was saying that they were gang members who tried to run over the...
Violent gang members who weaponized their vehicle against ICE officers. So again,
when they were like pinned in by four cars at the Adventist Hospital or whatever, and then shot as they were driving away. So, turns out, not gang members.
Turns out that this is it's a really interesting story, and I definitely welcome people to. There's like a great Guardian article.
Yeah, the Guardian
on,
covered it.
Which is, you know, big news for Portland. On looking at, they've been interviewing, immigration rights experts, human rights experts who have, now that this case that the federal government and ICE is presenting to a federal court against one of the two victims, the person driving, you know, the operator of the weapon, you're able to see their evidence supplied to justify these... this smear campaign that they've leveled against them. And unsurprisingly, it's threadbare. And,
it makes no sense.
And completely ludicrous. But Althea,
yes,
it does make sense to some.
Who?
Though some maybe being, unfortunately, our own Portland police.
Oh, right. Okay. So let's be clear about what the evidence supports in terms of their proximity to gang, which it's like debated / like not convincing that this gang even operates in Oregon.
The gang
Trend
being
Aragua.
Trend Aragua. Yeah. It's and they're kind of, I mean, I imagine probably a lot of listeners have heard of the gang because it's been used so much,
fear-mongered
so much in DHS as sort of part of this justification. Oh, there's rising crime.
Right.
Oh, there's, you know, increased
international
gangs.
No.
It's all part of this, conspiracy that they're weaving, that the federal government
xenophobic.
Is weaving to try and justify, you know, ramped up immigration enforcement.
And so the evidence that they actually have about these two Oregonians is that Luis Nino Moncada was maybe buying a car from somebody who they suspected of having gang ties. And then his partner, the woman that he was with, Yorlenis, she was a victim of a crime. She was like sexually assaulted, threatened at gunpoint, robbed, kidnapped. And then he went to go get her and... Then they were saying that she's like related to this and so, like she was the victim of a crime and then is like being lumped in.
Yeah, there were two cases that that the, you know, DHS was latching onto that Portland police then referenced, you know, when they came out just shortly after the shooting to kind of talk about the. After the shooting occurred, the FBI took over the investigation.
Right.
But Portland police was kind of someone, involved. You know, they obviously have a lot of the records of criminal records for people. And they were saying, there were two sort of cases. There was a shooting,
which
they were related to. And there was the fact that one of the individuals, Yolenis, had been quote unquote arrested for prostitution, which I think is... a pretty stark manipulation of the circumstances. As you were saying, she was working as a sex worker and had been assaulted by a client. Luis Nino Moncada, the driver in this, you know, the other victim in this shooting had come to get her things.
Yep. And neither of them were like suspects in the shooting.
Neither of them had any criminal record in the States.
Nope.
the DHS, I mean, the whole sort of circumstances of ICE intervening, I think they were going after Yelena's because she had, you know, quote unquote, illegally entered the United States.
Yeah, that's the only thing that they have on her.
That's the only thing they have on her. She's actually not even in this federal trial. No. You know, they've dropped her completely.
She's down to,
she's, I guess, no longer a, you know, a violent gang member. And it turns out that in, you know, as these in the Guardian article, so they've been looking at the federal case, the federal government have also dropped the whole claim that Luis Nino Moncada was related to Tren de Aragua at all.
Yeah.
Which is, again, related to the second shooting that actually I don't think involved either of them.
Yeah.
But involved people that they knew. And
maybe they and then knew the, people that something
there
that,
was someone who was like shot that and that person who was shot then told police that it was related to Tren de Aragua and a car sale.
Yeah.
The world's spanning criminal enterprise, imminent threat to the United, to the right. saints of the United States, car sale.
And then shortly after, right, you have Portland Police Chief Bob Day saying that there is a, he called it a nexus,
right.
in reference to the victims of being shot by Border Patrol, that they did have a nexus to this gang, which it really makes me wonder about the meaning of the word nexus. It makes me wonder about
there does seem to be a nexus here.
A
nexus of gullibility, I would say.
A nexus of xenophobia. Let's do a smear campaign on people who were shot.
I think it's really informative because now we're getting to see the evidence that was probably presented to Portland police as well, or that Portland police had and then were conferring with FBI about. And from that, Bob Day draws this nexus of gang affiliation. And we should say that, you know, he came out to the public. He had
emotional press conference.
It was a press conference, he was emotional because I think he maybe was.
Well, their initial statement was that we don't have anything even related to that gang, and so I think the FBI must have been like, "Well, what about this?
What about this?"
But how are they like tagging incidents that there's a nexus?
I think it gets into the way that, you know, Portland police and police across the United States sort of investigate, you know, gang, quote unquote, gang affiliation, the way in which is
already like insanely fraught to begin with. By
of course,
the way. We disbanded the gang unit of Portland Police a long time ago for being wildly like ineffective and also racist.
I think there's a great host of research and into how that, you know, that aspect of policing is basically, you know, like going after gangs is just a way to racially profile.
Yeah.
It's a way to, you know, in this case, I mean, again, feed into this grander DHS conspiracy
to absolve them of shooting two people in a car driving away outside a hospital.
And I think also to, you know, like the DHS, I mean, it is kind of illuminative, or illuminating, whatever the word is, how the DHS, how ICE is sort of like conducting this campaign of, you know, targeting people. I think, you know, the architect of this plan, Stephen Miller, would more than gladly deport anyone who's, I mean, not white,
right.
But, you know, deport anyone just based on their immigration status, like criminalize one's identity. And right. I think that these narratives show that there is, nonetheless, there is an attempt by them to try and convince others. I don't know who needs convincing at this point, but that they're looking for justification beyond the mere, you know,
right, because
their criminalization of one's identity.
Right, is unjustifiable. And I think people feel that way. I want to just end with a quote from Portland City Councilor Samir Canal from The Guardian article. Quote, "The federal government cannot be trusted. Our default position should be skepticism and understanding they lie very regularly. There's a playbook of demonizing people and claiming vehicles were used as weapons. We see a pattern of victim blaming, and it's important we push back because it's propaganda."
So
thank you, Counselor Canal.
Word to Bob Day. Word also, I mean, I will say my last point on this is that in the lead up all the way up to this point, now we have the trial, so we have all the evidence, and we're going to actually scrutinize these things and see, oh, wow, these claims that were made are completely unsubstantiated. But also, importantly, they also have footage now of the incident when the two were approached by DHS. You know, up to this point, like, you know, I'll say, like most news reporting on this event have described, like, Nino Moncada's driving as, like, he was ramming his car into the DHS vehicle, which I think really speaks, you know, it helps to substantiate the claim that he's weaponizing a vehicle.
There. Yeah.
And you look at the video and it's like, I'm sorry, he's trying to get out, he's trying to do a 10-point turn out of a parking spot.
Right.
It also should shame on people that are using language like ramming his car. You should know better.
Right.
You should be scrutinizing that language.
The level of scrutiny needs to be higher.
Nexus of criminality, ramming his car.
Nexus of criminality mean?
We
gotta get somebody on that.
That's gonna be our next show. Nexus of criminality. Alfie and my true crime show.
Oh boy, I did want to mention also though that a separate federal judge has restricted warrantless ICE arrests in Oregon. So this is from a class action lawsuit brought by Innovation Law Lab. We, I think, talked about this when they had their first hearing. I want to say it was in December. They had a bunch of ICE officers on the stand. This is when they were talking about that they have a quota of 8 arrests a day. They don't have warrants or evidence that there are 8 violent criminals, quote unquote, I'm using scare quotes, you can't see them, that need to be arrested a day. So they have to make their own leads, and that ICE is targeting areas, not specific individuals. And we heard a lot about what their actual methods are. And so they had a hearing on Wednesday to try to get a preliminary injunction to stop them from doing warrantless ICE arrests. And that federal judge has come down that ICE cannot be making warrantless arrests.
Which, again, I think in this Oregon. Will be a warrantless arrest because they might have somehow had, you know, Yolenis on their Donker as having illegally entered the United States.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
But is there a judge that will sign off on that? And this is coming from some of the class action plaintiffs, including folks who were driving to work in a van and ICE dragged everybody out, start scanning everyone's face, getting wrong answers, scanning their face again. People not doing anything wrong, people with green cards, people with lawful immigration status being dragged out by ICE from their place of work. Of course, we've also heard about places like where people congregate to find work, like Home Depot, Lowe's, being targets of ICE as well. Everything that Woodburn's been through, because it has such a robust Latino community, that anybody speaking Spanish is considered suspect enough for them to start arresting people.
Which, I mean, the basis of why ICE did feel emboldened to up their racial profiling was, you know, that Brett Kavanaugh, our great Supreme Court justice, I'm sorry, some more scare quotes, you know, his ruling of, you know, now there's this legal Kavanaugh stop, which basically allows for federal agents to stop and detain a person based on their perceived ethnicity, spoken language, or occupation in consideration with other factors.
Mm-hmm. That they have this practice of arrest first, justify later, that they would take people off the street, take them to the Portland ICE office, write the warrant once they're there, once they've figured out who they think you are, and then not let you see a lawyer and send you up to Tacoma. Mm-hmm. Even if you were somebody who had a valid work permit. There's another person, a plaintiff in this case, who had a valid work permit and who was waiting for a U visa, which is something that is because when you're if you're a victim of a crime and you testify in that court case, which his father did, you can get a U visa to, because you helped the government pursue somebody or whatever. And he's been accepted for that, but because the immigration system is so broken on mm-hmm. a good day, has not been processed, even though that was years ago. So, and then this guy, Victor Manuel Cruz Gomez, was taken and kept in Tacoma at the ICE detention center for like 3 weeks and in freezing cold conditions. Like the level of cruelty that they describe in these documents is like really, it's upsetting, obviously. I'm interested to see how this sort of ban on warrantless arrests goes. From the data that Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition has been sharing, the number of arrests has gone down dramatically. I think they reported 9 or something last week, which isn't to say that that's not still like intense
right.
violence that's happening to the community, but they partly chalk that up to the Operation Metro Surge, that all the ICE officers are still in Minneapolis right now.
Yeah.
But we also heard rhetoric this week that quote unquote Portland was next, you know, so important to keep an eye on. I'm interested to see if this is actually going to be borne out. But we did see a judge agree that this is like violent, illegal. You can't be doing that. Because obviously you can't be doing that.
And
sorry.
I mean, it continues a trend that the Trump administration, I mean, they tend to win the first day, but lose in the courts once their arguments are presented to...
in the eyes of logic, in the eyes of decency.
Let's say to the eyes of someone who's not, totally ideologically aligned with them.
Right. Okay. That's, I think, all we wanted to do on the ICE front, if that's okay. I think we're going to pivot over to our other story for this morning, which is about the Portland Housing Bureau, which found even more money. So first of all,
pull that slot and just see what comes out.
Yeah.
I think they should just, you know, if I were you, I'd be walking around the bureau just kind of peeking around corners, checking other desks.
Wait, this is a dummy light switch and just coins start pouring out.
$25.
So back in, it was November, right? November, December.
You're talking about
when they found out the first $21 million that they had extra?
The city council was notified by the ousted director of the Portland Housing Bureau, Helmi Hisserich, who revealed, you know, she was one talking about her departure from the bureau.
Yeah, she was fired without cause.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have kind of been struggling to figure out a reason why she was fired. She seemed to be pursuing the housing policy that Mayor Wilson had instated her to pursue. But in that memo, she also said, hey, there's also this $21 million that we kind of just found, like, back in August,
but
September.
But was told not to tell about this. So she commissioned this audit, and they found $21 million extra. And then was told that it would be a PR problem.
Told by Deputy City Administrator
Even
Donnie Oliveira.
After, in City Council had to do a funding adjustment for an $18 million funding gap that the city was dealing with. So that was not disclosed to City Council that there was $21 million unspent lying around until after they had already done this adjustment.
And she... And again, there's not been really an allegation that her ousting was related to this, but she was let go right around the same time that they're having these debates about how we fill this $16 million budget gap.
So that was then, and this is now, which is to say that there's $15 million more dollars. Which is more, even more money. And also, okay, sorry, one other thing about that $21 million, which I think we talked about maybe a couple weeks ago, is that the District 1 counselors put forward a plan to spend that $21 million on things to keep people from becoming homeless. Mm-hmm. So it's called the Slow the Inflow Resolution, and they want to spend it on stuff like rental assistance to help keep people,
and
eviction representation, stuff like
that. We should say that all of this, so the $21 million, it comes from basically a fee applied to landlords, just like an operational fee that's been done now since like 2018, but the funds have to be used for either affordable housing or for homelessness initiatives. So they are already limited
in scope.
And so, like you were saying, District 1
put forward this plan, and then they've been debating in recent weeks about spending some of it on an affordable housing project in the Broadway corridor. And now with $15 million extra dollars, they might be able to do both.
Might be able to do both.
Even though this is, I'll say it, embarrassing. What is going on? What on earth is going on?
It's crazy too. I forget about like $20 in my wallet.
And you get stoked when you find it.
And
obviously.
I'm like, yeah, I got stoked, but I'm also like, how did I not remember that I had those $20?
Yeah, I would have loved to have.
I'm sorry, is Portland Housing Bureau just rolling in cash? Or are they just like, are they like Scrooge McDuck and they're swimming in a sea of coins, and then they shake out their socks and go, oh,
look at that.
Here we are. This extra $15 million is from like more taxes and fees.
More of the same taxes and fees that the 21 was for.
It's, well, these ones, it looks like some of it is from like taxes paid by hotels and booking agents. The other ones
from
short-term rentals. So like Airbnb establishments, fees on those.
Well, folks, this is actually leading into our call-in question today.
Is it really?
It is. Yeah, we want to know. Have you ever found some unexpected funds in your couch, in your wallet, in your purse, whatever? And what did you do with it? Let us know. 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. Click on that chat with us button. I think we let people start thinking about, have you ever picked the penny up off the ground?
Let it gestate.
Give us a call and
have
tell
you ever
us
picked,
about it. Have
you ever picked 16 trillion, no, quadrillion pennies off the ground?
I might need to see the numbers on that. I'm not very good. Once they get big like that, I haven't found 15 million in my couch, but I will let you guys know. We're going to take a little musical break. Call in the meantime, 503-231-8187. This is Genius Box.
Bye-bye.
Hold on to me, don't let me go. Who cares what they see? Who cares what they know? Your first name is free, last name is dumb. But you still believe in where we're from. Man's right. Cheetahs need to eat, run antelope. Your first name is King, last name is Dumb. Cause you still believe in everyone. From heat, the electric one, does it shock you to see he left us the sun? Atoms in the air, organisms in the sea, sun and yes man are made of the same things.
And we are back here on Genius Box. This is KBOO Community Radio. I'm Althea. I'm here with Reed. We are talking about the Portland Housing Bureau having even more unspent funds that they found. We want to know from you, have you ever found some unexpected funds? Did you ever have, in real life, draw the Monopoly card that said bank error in your favor? And what did you do with the money? Let us know. 503-231-8187 is the number.
Althea, I get bank error in my favor every year with that delicious kickback from...
Oh, the kicker, of course. Yeah, that's a great, however much money. But then you think, you're like, wow, I'm rich to get however much you get back. But then you think about how much the billionaires and the trillionaires get back. It's a lot. We got a comment on the online that says, funny that finding money, it's not unlike how when I buy cannabis and hide little quantities from myself, then the joy that fills my psyche when I discover my secret stash. Wee! Thank you for sending that in. I guess, yeah, you could hide another type of resource from yourself other than money, I suppose.
That's right.
I had my great aunt gave me this purse that I really liked.
Nice.
And there was like a pocket that's kind of too small to put anything in. I don't know if people like put like one card. Oh, maybe if I had had a business card at the time, but there was like $20 in there that I never used, but I just kept it in there. And then I stopped using that purse, never having used the $20, until I think I was like cleaning my closet in COVID and I was like, yes. I'm so up right now. I needed this so badly.
What did you do
even
with
just
the
spiritually? I don't know what I did with the $20. Wow. I might have got boba, to be honest, which boba does not cost $20 yet. Yeesh.
Yeah,
but I sometimes just that little spiritual boost that I found something that I didn't even know that I had lost. Give us a call. Has this happened to you? 503-231-8187. Have you ever lost $15 million and forgot to tell the city council about it? We want to know.
It's pretty relatable, isn't it?
It's relatable. Hey, been there. I will say on Thursday, city council did pass a resolution to require the city administrator to schedule an oversight hearing, release public records on these unspent surplus funds. So we have that to look forward to in the future. It will be the first time that city council and the city administrator have had to put on an oversight hearing, I believe, in this particular
That's exciting.
Way. So, guys, it's still a new government system. Get excited. Get excited about whatever you want.
Get excited about an audit.
Guys, get hyped. Are you guys not loving auditing?
I think that's the wrong energy to bring to the auditing meeting.
Hey, that's fair enough. I'm open to the feedback. We have Tawasi on the line. Hi, Tawasi. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. You know, there was a program on KBOO a couple weeks ago where the county auditor was basically saying, you guys really need to follow the money. Do you remember that show?
I am not sure off the top of my head, but I can look into it for you.
I want to say it was like on a Thursday or Wednesday.
Okay.
But basically what they're saying is that as the auditors, they're kind of feckless. Like they can say, oh, we found the missing money, but they can't really do much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were basically calling on the voters to do the work of finding the missing money because... In there, and I wish I remembered the show, but basically what they're saying is that there's enormous graft going on in the city, and if you look at the numbers, you can find it and try and hold the people accountable. But the larger upshot of this call is that there's no treaty for the Oregon Territory ratified by Congress. So the entire state of Oregon is, in essence, found wealth for colonizers that doesn't have any basis. Like, there's no... The only way that this state is a state is through, basically, like, the graft that the county auditor was saying we need to address.
Hmm.
Anyway, I would love to see the Chinook people come into some of that hidden wealth because the entire city of Portland sits on their territory and the federal government doesn't even recognize them as a nation for obvious reasons. If they did, all of the wealth of the city of Portland would be essentially owed to the Chinook people.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime people talk about wealth, I always bring my mind back to the fact that Wells Fargo issued titles for land they didn't own. So, you know, when you look at, for instance, the wealth of the Wheeler family that they made off of timber harvest, all that timber harvest was on illegitimate title. So, you know, it's a little bit off topic, but at the core of wealth, specifically wealth in Portland, is land theft.
Mm-hmm.
And until you look at the genocide and land theft that allows you wealth, then you're just doing this little make-believe thing about, oh, we discovered this lost nugget that we had hidden from ourselves. And no, you know, they put the people on forced marches to reservations so they could steal this wealth. And they didn't obey their own laws to get a ratified treaty in front of Congress. So the history of our state is one of genocide and land theft. And without land theft, there would be zero wealth for the Wheelers or for the, I'm trying to remember the Parkade family that owned all of the parking facilities in Portland. But there's basically just like a handful of families in Portland that have enormous piles of money basically stolen. And, you know, we don't really look at wealth as being a product of theft. But in essence, every dollar manufactured by the U.S. Department of Treasury comes from the blood of dead indigenous people. So, you know, it's a weird way to look at money and probably something that you're not really used to thinking about. But I don't see dollars as dollars. I see them as murder notes written on the dead bodies of my ancestors. Because without massacre and land theft, there would be no United States dollars. So anyway, I try and look at wealth a little bit differently. I think of the genius box as being wealth. You guys make me rich. I don't have money. I don't need money for a lot of things, but I do need intelligent, dialed in, you know, caring intellectual contacts. And I thank you for that. And maybe try and adjust your worldview to what wealth is away from being money and towards being people.
Mm.
Mm.
Because the people are actually the power and the wealth. You know, your engineer is the wealth. You guys are the wealth. Without you, I would have no genius box. But without money, I would still have you. You see how that works?
Hmm. I do. Well, Tawasi, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks,
we appreciate
so much,
you, as
Tawasi.
Always.
And a shout out to Nate too, our engineer.
And a shout out to Nate. As soon as you start pulling the thread, how far back do we want to go? And so I appreciate Tawasi bringing that up, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of different ways you can take it. Of course, Portland City Council is looking at how did we miss this? Council President Dunphy was saying that he doesn't think it's hidden maliciously, that it's the old government system of accounting that is still part of this adjustment to the new system. I don't want to jump on saying that it's malicious. I wouldn't say.
No.
But this can't happen again.
It's interesting.
City
in the middle of a housing crisis.
Housing and
homelessness crisis is unaware of veritable millions in money piling up by taxing, you know, hotels, short-term rentals, landlords.
But related to what Tawasi was saying, like that it goes back to land.
Yeah.
It goes back to, and to like mega corporations, I suppose, as well, with things like Airbnb. It also makes me think of PSEF, which everybody is keen on raiding because it's amassed wealth based on the most exploitative among entities in the city, which is like mega corporations, right?
Granted, a 1% tax on mega corporations. I mean, just right. Really for them, you know, for us, untold millions, and truly like the, you know, like the life saving, you know, fund for the entire city budget for them, you know, pocket change that
right,
they can
right. makes, you know, a rounding error.
The, yeah, rounding error in the budget.
A rounding error on the budget.
As yeah.
Folks,
as our mom Donnie has said.
Yeah, we are talking about the Portland Housing Bureau finding even more unexpected funds. Have you ever found unexpected wealth in any way you want to take that, I suppose? Because we had someone talk about cannabis and we had Tawasi talk about people as well. We would love to hear from you. 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the KBOO website, kbu.fm. Click on that chat with us and we'll see it. Okay, let's go to April on the phones. Hi, April.
Hi. I love your question. I don't usually find wealth that I've hidden for myself. I did, however, find like $50 that I, excuse me, stuff happens.
Stuff definitely stuff happens. So yeah, it sounds like you found a $50 that you had lost before. That's good to hold on to. Thank you, April, for calling. If other folks want to call, have you found unexpected wealth in your couch, in your suitcase, I don't know, wherever you keep it? Also, where's a good hiding spot for your unexpected wealth? I don't know. Maybe you could tell us that too. 503-231-8187. We have Jeff on the line. Hi, Jeff. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello and good morning. I hope you're well. It was I who made that cannabis comment.
Oh, nice.
I do it quite often. I go to the cannabis store. I get what is legally I am legally permitted to purchase. I break it into smaller portions and hide it from myself. It works. And to confirm what Tawasi said, the family's name was Goodman. They owned multiple parking garages in Northwest Portland and essentially had a monopoly on the automobile parking garage business. And it was uniquely corrupt. But my commentary is this: it's not unlike a vampire with a blood bank. So
there's a cartoon in there.
If you're dealing with vampires who bank the blood, well, they're dealing with vampires, aren't you?
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking my call and carry on and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it as always. 503-231-8187. If you would like to call in and chat with us about secret, newly discovered Portland Housing Bureau funds, or where you're hiding wealth from yourself, or what you did with it when you found it, let us know. 503-231-8187. Have you done this, Reed? Where are you finding unexpected wealth?
Have I done this?
Or you know where all of your money is at all times. You're one of those people.
I spend my money immediately after receiving it. That's the way I do it.
No need to keep track of it. If I'm handing it out as soon as it touches my palm.
Yeah, I'm not even letting it touch the palm. I'm doing a little deft. I'm turning deftly as they extend the money to me, and it's just moving beyond me.
Yeah. Pivot. Caught a pivot out of the way. When expanding our definition of wealth, I started thinking about things that I do that I forget that I've done, that I are then a pleasant surprise to myself later, which is, I'll say, guys, a little bit difficult to frame in terms of a question, but sometimes I will find like a ice cream sandwich under my freezer that I bought over the summer and like forgot about. And sometimes you need that. Winter ice cream sandwich, emotionally important to a guy like me.
To Tawasi's point of expanding our definition of wealth, I'll say one thing that now creeps into my mind that sort of fits this definition. Sometimes I'll send a text, or I'll try to call an old friend.
Yeah.
Leave a voicemail or text. And then months and months later, I'll get this really nice text back. Hey, sorry, I missed this text. We'll catch up.
Yeah.
It's very enriching. I've rekindled many friendships that way. So there's a very nice, that's something I feel like if there's the best encapsulation of encountering something that I've forgotten about, but like truly you feel joyful about re-encountering, it'd be that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have Arthur on the line with us. Hi, Arthur. Good morning.
Good morning, Althea and Reed, the dynamic duo. I get unexpected wealth. My brother sent me 2 silver coins a few months ago, and I went to a small place, I'm not going to name it, on 3rd and Washington downtown. I cashed in these 2 silver coins weighing less than a total of 70 grams. I got $112 for that stuff. And luckily, 3rd in Washington, where I cashed in my coins, for these 2 silver coins, $112. Imagine that.
Whoa.
Nice.
Yeah. And the Yamhill Pub was just down the street. So it was pretty convenient. I just went to the Yammy after I went. I'll let you guys riff on that.
All right. Thanks, Arthur.
The Yammy. I've never heard that
short,
but I love the name. Now I'm just going to say that for Yamhill all the time now.
Yeah. Going down to Yammy, why not?
Taking the Yammy up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, also getting, like you're saying, an unexpected text from somebody, an unexpected piece of mail might be wealth.
Oh, yeah. The old-fashioned unexpected Morse code.
Oh, are you... Okay.
No, I'm just thinking of other archaic forms of communication.
It's not archaic.
I'm just kidding.
I'm also being defensive because I'm somebody who likes to randomly mail people stuff.
People can't see my wry smile as I needle Althea.
Picture a wry smile and hands constantly poised for scare quotes because he's ready at any moment.
Hands crooked weathered by scare quotes.
And he can't put his arms down because they've been up for so long. It makes a loud creaking sound
like a door.
No, dude, I wanted you to do the sound.
Oh.
That's good. That's the kind of ASMR that people turn into the Genius Box for, is the creaking of your shoulder joint.
High pitched.
Anyway, we have Steven on the line with us. Hi, Steven. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I have a comment about unexpected wealth, and it ties in with the territorial comment about Oregon status.
Please, let's hear it.
Joe Meek was a fur trapper who settled in the Willamette Valley, and he was sent back to Washington, D.C. to seek territorial status for the state, or for the territory, and he was given $50 for his expenses. Instead, he used it to throw himself a party here, claiming that there was no place to spend $50 between here and Washington, D.C. And I always thought that was a funny story.
That is a funny story.
He threw the party. Wait, where did he throw the party?
He threw the party in Oregon?
Yes, before he left.
Oh.
And then when he got to Washington, D.C., this is a better known story. He was in buckskins, and he was treated as a celebrity and went to all the balls and to the White House. And he stayed there for quite a while in his celebrity status.
Wow.
They must have just not...
What was his name again? Sorry, I didn't catch that part.
Joe Meek. M-E-E-K.
Okay. Interesting. Well, thank you for that historical factoid. I appreciate you giving us a call.
Joe Meek, English record producer and songwriter. Considered to be one of the most influential sound engineers of all time. So kind of had a second career after trapping.
Can't imagine that's the proper person.
Noted for producing the Tornado's instrumental Telstar.
Okay, now are you on the Wikipedia page for everybody that might refer to?
Okay, no, it's for Joe Meek. Althea, don't impugn my reputation as a researcher.
Sorry.
I guess he must have done that pretty early on because he was born in 1929. So
I really don't think we're talking about the right person. Folks, we got a few minutes left. If you want to talk to us about unexpected wealth, where do you find it? What do you do with it? 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the KBU website, kbu.fm. Click on that chat with us button.
Technical ingenuity first shown on Humphrey Littleton's jazz single, Bad Penny Blues.
He's so off track right now. Nate, do you have any unexpected wealth? Can we ask our engineer in here? He might have some ideas.
Well, thank you for asking.
It was a passive aggressive.
No.
Finally, his mic's been on this whole time, and he's been tapping the glass.
Sending the flares up.
In fact, every day, the entire show.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Nate.
I used to work in a movie theater, and so there was often unexpected wealth found while cleaning up after people.
Oh, like what?
20s. 50s, 100s.
No way.
Like, $100 bill?
Yeah, you would just throw it in the pile, you know, take it home, throw it in the pile. Yeah.
Pile.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Your home pile? At home?
The pile of cash that I sleep on.
Oh. Talk about unexpected wealth.
Yeah. Okay.
But my favorite was we used to watch after hours movies there, and it was when my oldest son was just a toddler, so we would bring him, he would fall asleep in our arms. He would wander the whole theater, and one time he
sleepwalking?
No, like sometimes he was awake too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can see where you would think that. But he would wander the whole theater, and I went to go get him one night, and right where he was playing on the ground, which admittedly kind of gross, there was a pile of cash, and I thought to myself, this kid's paying off.
You shake the kid a little bit more to try and see if anything else came out.
You know, you
don't shake babies.
You don't shake you don't shake babies.
You pat them down.
I'm sorry. Oh yeah, exactly.
You turn their pockets out.
Yeah, turn them upside down. And just let gravity do the work.
No. Reed is going to be banned from
parenting.
Yep. Child rearing.
Lifetime banned from parenting.
Anything like that.
Okay, I found the real Joseph Meek.
Oh, sure. All right.
Mountain Man,
sure.
Also, brother of Stephen Meek, who is notably the guide along the trail that's now known as Meek's Cutoff, the name as well of the great Kelly Reichert movie shot in Oregon.
Okay.
Speaking a little Oregon movie lore.
Right. Now you've thread the needle.
Now I've thread the needle. It all connects back to Kelly Reichert.
Everybody can be proud of me again.
Everyone bow down to the great researcher that I am.
Can I also say unexpected wealth? Sometimes unexpected wealth is unexpected knowledge, which I sometimes get from Wikipedia.
Yes.
I'm sorry, like when we were young, Wikipedia, you're not supposed to really
trust
it.
Pariah website.
Kind of maybe the only bastion of truth left based on all of those nerd sticklers. And I say that with love, nerd sticklers. You make my life richer. But finding some
nerd
sort
stickler,
of...
it sounds like a Scandinavian name.
Nerd stickler, Colin.
Hi, my name is a nerd stickler.
We have like 2 seconds. But sometimes I find information, a wealth of information, a wealth of random facts that I didn't know, but are either illuminative, as you had said earlier, or just bizarre.
Like this guy's name is Robert George Meek, but he goes by Joe.
Right. Well, that's not that weird. that's really not it, I don't think.
That's profoundly
wealthy.
Strange.
Okay. We have Arthur, who's going to give us one last word on the phones. Hi, Arthur.
Hi, Arthur.
Hey, good morning again. Sorry to call twice. I feel like a phone hog.
What were you going to say? Yeah, we're running out of time.
Thank you. That's me. So real quick here. I got busted by the TriMet police for not paying my ticket fare.
Uh-huh.
And I went to court for it. I pled not guilty. I don't know why, but I pled not guilty. I brought $90 to bring with me to pay my judgment. I pled not guilty, and I got out of that ticket, and then I had $90 to spend. And I took that money, and since I was downtown, I took a visiting couple from Germany, a man and his wife, and I took him to the Yammy.
To the Yammy. Yeah. The Yammy's really...
I took him to the Yammy, and I bought them each some really bad, bad beer. They're from Germany. They know the good stuff. Anyway, I'll let you in out and riff out on that. Thank you, both of you.
Okay.
Bye, Arthur.
Thanks, Arthur.
Interesting. So with those $90, you built a horrible experience for some visiting for a visiting couple.
That's great. That's great. Unexpected wealth.
Orchestrated misery for.
Well, you know what? I think that's probably what we're going to end on. Any last words from you, Reed, before we wrap it up?
I have no last words, but going to head over to the Yammy after this, I think.
I don't think that's okay. What's happening. Well, out of the box segment, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Could be. Yeah.
We are going to leave things here. Thank you for joining us on Genius Box this morning. Thank you to everybody who called. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Nate for engineering. Thank you to Reed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, my God.
And to thank you, the third person in the room who hasn't been speaking this entire time, but just been staring at us.
Yep. And now that we're done, I think we can all get out of the Genius Box and leave this person behind forever. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH, Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programs.